The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'll be inside. There's more chairs inside. You can still come in if you would like. Over the end there. So, welcome to IMC, the Insight Meditation Center. My name is Gil Fronsdal, and people are still coming in, so I'll talk about what's least important first, which is about me. IMC has been here in Redwood City since 2002, and before that, we met in a variety of places, but the primary location was in Palo Alto. We rented different churches and different locations through the week for different events. And then we got this building and consolidated everything here. And this group that we're part of here at IMC started about 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been a small sitting group that grew to become IMC. Can everyone hear okay? Does anybody have trouble hearing? It's a strange question, I know. Anybody can't hear? Because we do have hearing assistant devices. And if anybody feels like they need the extra help, at some point we'll do some guided meditation and my voice gets kind of low. So there are probably a half a dozen or dozen or so of these hearing assistant devices that you could use and that helps. And so let us know. Just raise your hand if you want one or something. And when? Yeah. The number of us can help you to get them if you want. So I've been involved with Buddhist practice for most of my adult life. I think I first started meditating when I was 20 and got seriously involved with doing Zen Buddhism in college. But when I graduated from college, I moved to the San Francisco Zen Center to be there and practice Zen there. I practiced Zen for many years, was ordained as a Zen priest or Zen monk, went and practiced Zen in Japan for a year, and then ended up going to Thailand and was introduced to the practice of mindfulness that is what we teach here at IMC. And it's mindfulness is a very simple practice that is not meant to be esoteric, you know, some strange mystical Asian kind of thing. It's just using the basic capacity for the human capacity for attention, careful attention to the present moment. So I was introduced to that in Thailand, and then I spent time in Thailand and Burma, was ordained as a monk there, and was involved in lots of practice of this kind of meditation. And then I came back to this country and to go to graduate school. And of all the things to study, I studied Buddhist studies. And eventually came to Stanford to do a doctorate in Buddhist studies at Stanford. And while I was there, when I started there in 1990, the group that was IMC back then, they asked me to come and teach for them. So I started teaching for them in 1990. So I've been teaching here for 25 years now, out here on the peninsula. And I've been teaching this intro class for most of that time, sometimes several times a year. And it's one of my favorite things to teach. And even though a lot of the things I say is the same thing every time, but I'm never quite sure what I'm going to say. And in fact, I'm hoping to surprise myself every time I teach. And occasionally I do. So hopefully we'll see if that works this time around. But I find it's very fresh and feels a kind of privilege to be able to teach you something that I love quite deeply. So those of you in the outer hall, if you want to take this moment to come inside here, there are probably a dozen or so chairs inside if you want to get a little closer and see better. So the way that this mindfulness is going to be taught for these 5 weeks is meant, hopefully, to be available, applicable for anybody. But I will probably make some reference to Buddhism as I do it. And so if you're not interested in Buddhism, know that mindfulness does not need Buddhism, but Buddhism needs mindfulness. So you're welcome to leave any reference to the B word out as you come here, and don't feel that's obligatory. But IMC is a Buddhist center, and there are some things that come with for us with being a Buddhist center and kind of the values of Buddhism. And the primary one that I wanted to share with you right now is that it's the custom or practice, our value, to offer whatever happens here at IMC to offer freely. And so we never charge for anything here, and that's the way that this is offered this time as well. And if some of you would like to make a donation to support IMC or support the teacher, in this case it would be me, there is a box by the door, and it has two slots, one for the operations of running the place, and then the other is for the teacher of the event that you're at, and in this case it would be here. And it's a kind of an amazing thing that we're able to operate quite beautifully because a lot of people support us to do this thing, offer this unusual thing, offer things freely. The other thing that's unusual, maybe a little bit, about IMC, there are some places like this in society, but everything that gets done here is done by volunteers. And the cleaning of the place, everything, that happens here pretty much, unless we have to call a plumber in, then sometimes we have to pay for it. Unless he's doing it. Or this week I did it. Okay. So mindfulness. The word in Buddhism refers to our simple capacity to be aware. But aware in a special way, to have a heightened awareness to what's happening in the present moment. And it's rare that people have a heightened awareness to the present moment, because most generally we are caught up in our thoughts. We have a lot of reactions and responses to the world. Some people spend a lifetime not in the present moment, not really in some high quality way. They spend their time thinking about. They spend their time thinking about the past, thinking about the future. They think they're sometimes in fantasy for a variety of reasons. And sometimes that's quite innocent, and sometimes that produces a tremendous amount of stress, because there's a lot of emotions sometimes connected to the past, a lot of emotions connected to the future, a lot of emotions connected to our fantasies and our imaginations of how things are. And so to learn how to step away from the imaginary world or the virtual world of thinking about the past, the future, or fantasy, our imagination, we try to cultivate a heightened sense of awareness, where we try to be present in a clear way about what's happening here in the present moment. And it's not a strange capacity, we all have it, and there are times in our daily life where that happens naturally by itself. Sometimes it's very satisfying. Sometimes it happens because we had a near accident in our car, and boy, we alert then, and the present moment seems quite alive. The idea in Buddhism is to develop this capacity for heightened attention together with being calm, or what we'd like to say is to be non-reactive, to not be in a mode of judging or reacting, moving towards or moving away from our experience, but letting attention be balanced and open so it's not biased, so it's not influenced by our prejudices, not influenced by our aversions or our desires or our fears or anything, but kind of a clear, full presence for what is here. And when you get a hang of it, when people get a hang of it, it's usually deeply, deeply satisfying, because it brings a lot of peace, and it brings a very strong alternative way of being in the world that's different than a reactive mode. And one of the things that people discover when they start to meditate, and it's, in some ways sometimes it's kind of humbling, is how much the mind is spinning around in its thoughts, how much we get chased around and pulled around left and right by all kinds of thoughts. And if you pay attention to the way the mind kind of often veers off into thoughts and concerns, it's not uncommon to find that that whole activity of being caught up in thoughts has tension involved in it. It doesn't really, or it has emotions which are not very pleasant and involved in it. Sometimes it's pleasant to be involved in thoughts and preoccupations and desires, but generally that pleasure is a kind of a false illusion, because sooner or later those desires, the expectations, the hopes, things don't really live up to what we expect sometimes. And then we're disappointed, or we don't get it at all. And so this whole idea to be able to kind of step back from the momentum of desires, the momentum of anxieties, the momentum of hostilities and resentments, the momentum of confusion, the momentum of creating kind of imaginary worlds of who we are and who we are in relationship to other people and what other people think about us, to step away from all that tends to bring a lot of peace, a lot of well-being. From the Buddhist point of view, that sense of well-being that comes from that kind of attention is not meant to be an end in itself, but rather we want to be able to see deeply into our experience of life. The Buddhist analysis of our life is that most people live on the surface of their life. And so once we're able to be in the present moment in a calm and clear way, then sometimes we can start seeing the underlying operating systems, operating principles that makes our whole life tick. And it's quite something to kind of drop below the kind of usual conscious level and start seeing the desires and aversions and values and preoccupations we have, and to learn to become wise about that. Because what you can't see about yourself, you can't be wise about. But as you kind of wake up and see more about how you operate, you become wiser and wiser about that. And as you become wiser, you can live a wiser life and cause less havoc or problems for the world around you and for yourself as well. So one of the hallmarks of the whole purpose, or one of the kind of concepts of the whole purpose of this practice, is to a deep abiding peace of the heart. The heart is so feeling so at home in itself, so at peace in itself, that there's a quality of deep well-being and peace that comes with it. For people who feel like that's maybe too selfish, you know, peace for oneself, in Buddhism it's very well understood that as all these filters we have, all the unconscious filters we have or conscious filters we have that interfere with our ability to see well, when all the kind of the reactive emotions begin to quiet down and this clarity and openness and peace begins to happen, we're settled on ourselves, there's a peace of heart here, then our capacity for empathy grows, our capacity to feel connected to other people grows, and connected in a balanced way, not kind of leaning too far into other people, pulling back too far, but a kind of a clear, kind of open channel for much clearer communication, clearer love, clearer compassion, kindness, generosity, all these wonderful feelings. So in Buddhism, the whole momentum of developing stable, strong, present moment attention is meant for our own welfare and for the welfare of the people around us. And that's my hope, is that if you do this, at least you get the some glimpse of the potential this practice has to create a lot of good for our world. So the practice of mindfulness is, as I've said, is just basically a practice of developing your natural abilities for attention so you can keep it alive and active in the present moment as the present moment unfolds. And as I've said, you'll probably find that your mind will slip off the present moment quite readily as it starts thinking about things. And it's a training to come back. And it's a training to build a muscle in the mind, kind of like a muscle, so that our capacity to be present becomes stronger and stronger. Many people haven't really developed that capacity of attention. The only time they're really fully attentive is if something is super interesting or super scary. But to develop the capacity, the natural capacity for strong attention without needing the incentive of desire or fear is not something a lot of people develop. As we develop this capacity, we also develop a second capacity, which is a capacity to let go of our preoccupations, to let go of our reactive emotions so they don't interfere with our lives. And these two things are really make a wonderful pairing, the pairing of clear attention and the ability to let go. And this that leads to the deepening of the practice. So the mindfulness practice that I'll be teaching you over these weeks is applicable in daily life, as you go about your life, as well as in meditation. But for the purposes of this class, the primary reference point will be meditation practice, and I'll be teaching you meditation. But hopefully you'll see by the end of the 5 weeks that many of the things I'm teaching you about meditation is equally applicable in daily life, where you discover the value of this heightened attention in daily life as well. And that's when the practice really gets kind of juicy, really, for people, is when they learn to apply it to the rest of their life as well, not just leave it for the cushion. But I will talk about meditation. And I think maybe that one of the best ways to do it is to get you meditating sooner rather than later and do a guided meditation with you. And to do that, I'd like to first spend a little bit of time talking about meditation posture. And because posture is a very important support for the mind. Our body, in Buddhism, we use the body as a support for this heightened clarity we want from the mind. And so you want to take a posture that expresses some degree of alertness. Not a tense alertness, but many people associate meditation with relaxation. And meditation can be very deeply relaxing, but if that's what people are primarily focusing on, to relax, then they sometimes can't actually relax as deeply as meditation can permit. If you kind of slump in a, it seemed like if you're tense, right, it seemed like good just to slump in a couch and kind of be a couch potato, and then you can really relax, right? You can't actually relax as deeply slumping in a couch as you can if you sit upright straight. And that the shoulders drop, the chest opens up, and all these kind of more, that body gets much more aligned. There was a study I read many years ago. They studied what postures allowed people to relax most deeply. And the two postures that were equally effective in really deep relaxation was the corpse posture in yoga and the cross-legged posture sitting this way here, upright. For people who are not used to sitting up with a straight back, sometimes it takes a while to build the muscles to be able to hold yourself upright. But it's a really good thing to work towards. But the most important reason to talk a little bit about posture at the beginning is so that you can be relatively comfortable when you sit and have a posture that supports you. So I'll talk a little bit about sitting on the floor and then a little bit about sitting on the chair. The classic image of a Buddha meditating is sitting cross-legged. That's kind of the classic idea. And those of you sitting in a chair, I can tell you a little piece of Buddhist kind of mythology or lore, and that is Buddhists believe that in about 5.6 billion years, the next Buddha is going to come. So that's pretty good. And but the next Buddha, he sits in a chair. So you're just preparing the way for the Buddha. So we're sitting on the floor. The purpose of sitting on the floor that I understand is that you create a wide base with your cross-legged legs that creates a strong, stable base that allows your center of gravity to be low. And you can kind of relax and settle more deeply with this low center of gravity. And you have a stable base that supports you. There's something about sitting cross-legged that also can give very good support for the lower back. So it's easier to keep the back straight. Sometimes it's easier for the back sitting this way than it is for sitting in a chair. If you can sit this way. Some people can't, not limber enough to do it. What's recommended is you don't actually sit flat on the floor, but that you elevate yourself a little bit. And we have these cushions. So I have a round cushion like this. And there's a variety of different kinds of cushions. There's half moon cushions that that sometimes spread the weight more nicely. And the idea with a cushion is by lifting your butt off the floor a little bit, it's easier to get your knees down. So So your knees, both knees are kind of on the floor. And it's also, it kind of accentuates or supports the natural curvature in the lower part of the back. And if you're completely flat, sitting flat on the floor, the tendency is that the lower part of the back either flattens out or gets pushed back as we kind of slump a little bit. Now, if you want to sit cross-legged, the way I'm sitting, I actually don't recommend you actually sit cross-legged, because that puts a lot of torque on the knees and the ankles when you lift your, you know, up and one crossing the other. But rather, sit in what's called Taylor fashion or Burmese fashion, and that is one leg in front of the other, so they're not actually crossed. So maybe you can see my arms this way. Cross-legged would be like this, but so one is in the lower legs, one is in front of the other. And that is the most balanced posture for the legs. When you sit quarter lotus or half lotus or full lotus, it tends to kind of tip the body one direction and you have to kind of straighten out to be straight. If you have trouble getting your knees down, then sometimes you can, a couple of things you can do. You can sit higher. Most people can get their knees down and they can sit higher. And there'll be a chance later to get, maybe you can sit higher there. And or what you do is you can get a little cushion, a towel, a blanket or something, and put it underneath. If you can't get your knees down, put it underneath your knees so your knee is a little bit supported. So it's not just dangling, and that's going to be a good thing to do. Small adjustments in the legs can make a big difference in comfort. If you move your knees further apart or closer together, your feet further from your body, closer in, can sometimes make a difference. If you have trouble sitting this way, on the floor, but would like to sit on the floor, there's a couple of other options. One is to sit on a bench, like this man is. So these benches here, where you actually sit on your knees, kind of, but most of the weight goes onto the bench, so not directly on your knees or your legs. And that can be very comfortable for some people to sit. And we have lots of benches here. They're underneath the stage up there on the far end. There's an open section by the little steps. And if you want to try that. The other possibility is we have these... you know, when you have these round cushions and you put them upright like this and then you put them between your knees and sit on them. And that's also can be very comfortable for some people who want to sit on the floor. And you can have your legs out wide or close in as you like. Now, if you want to sit on a chair, there is a recommendation that if it's possible for the sake of your back, that you not use the backrest. Because there's a way in which what we're trying to do in this kind of meditation practice is to develop a certain kind of inner self-reliance that's easier to discover if we're physically self-reliant. There's a very strong connection between the body and the mind, what the body does and the mind does. And so if you kind of sit back and use the backrest, it's a little bit slower to develop this inner self-reliance we want to discover. Some people have to use the backrest because of back conditions or whatever. It's fine to do it. Maybe it's the Buddha after the next that'll come back resting in an easy chair. But the idea is to, if you can avoid it, it's actually kind of a nice thing to do. Or if you need support for your backrest, to see if you can have the support low down and not high up. Because it have a little bit the back self-supporting. It makes it a little bit easier to be alert. So if you want to sit on the chair, the instructions are don't cross your legs, but have both feet flat on the ground. And if your feet don't reach the ground properly, you can get some cushions and build up a little bit of height. And then ideally your knees would be at the same level as your hips or lower. You don't want your knees higher than your hips, because then it tends to push out the lower part of the back. And so then if you're tall, you want to build up some, you know, some cushions on the chair so be able to sit higher. The classic instruction is to have the feet, the legs going straight out and going down 90 degrees. So they're kind of parallel to each other. Some people like to have their legs out wide so there's a wider base of support. Some people like to ever so gently make a little slope on this seat. Some chairs actually slope back, downwards, backwards, and that's not so good for meditation. So try to make it flat or ever so. It's better actually to have the slope go down towards the front. It actually makes it easier for the back to do that. And then, so whether you're sitting on the chair or sitting on the floor, there's a little exercise, kind of movement you can do, which is you can take, maybe from the bench you can, maybe you can probably do it on the side of the bench, is you can take your hands on the floor and lift yourself, or on the side of the chair, and lift yourself kind of almost off your cushion or the chair. And then as you release your arms, let your shoulders roll back a bit. And doing that sometimes will create a much more erect posture, more alert posture. It also will help sometimes the shoulders to relax a bit. This whole emphasis on the posture and taking good posture is part of the training to begin to shift the attention out of the thinking mind, all the kind of waves of thoughts that come through, into something that's more grounded and centered with the body. And so the more careful you are with your body and your posture, the more you're starting this practice of coming into your body and stepping out of the streams of your thoughts. I've seen, because I spent many years at Zen centers, I noticed that the more years that someone was a Zen student, and I know people who have been Zen students for 40 years practicing, that or 50 years, the longer they practice, the more time they took to get into their posture. You know, they would rock back and forth, they would sway, they'd kind of really get into the fine points of really being, you know, here. So that's an encouragement, you know, take some time with your posture and get connected to it. With your hands, you can do anything with your hands, where both hands are symmetrical, doing the same thing. I like to keep my hands, palms down on my thighs. Palms up is fine. The classic Buddhist posture is to have one hand on top of the other in front of you, and that's a fine thing to do as well, or to have both hands kind of on your ankles, kind of just resting there. What you want to be a little bit careful for is that if you don't have your hands too far forward on your thighs, so you're pulling your body and your shoulders forward, you know, like this. So, ideally, your elbows would be lined up with the sides of your ribs here, so that you kind of pull back a little bit. And also, if you have your hands down on your ankles, which some people like to do, or their heels, that's sometimes, depending on maybe the arm-torso ratio length, it sometimes also can pull us forward. And so what some people like to do is they get something, a pillow or a sweater or something, and put it on their feet, so they keep their hands a little bit higher, and so they're supported higher, so they don't get pulled forward. Or you can just self-support them. Yeah. Which is the Zen thing to do. And then in our tradition, we encourage people to close their eyes when they meditate. There are some teachers in our tradition that teach people to meditate with their eyes open or half open. If that's what you prefer to do, it's fine to do. If you keep your eyes open, the idea is maybe pointing your gaze 45 degrees down towards the floor, but keeping the kind of focus you'd have if you're looking at a mountain far in the distance. But if it's okay with you, all equal for you, we encourage you to keep your eyes closed, partly because we believe that for most people, as we start getting more settled and into the kind of fine development of concentration and mindfulness, it's easier to do that with the eyes closed when there's less kind of stimulus coming in and to distract us or something. It kind of simplifies things. And the final thing about posture is you want to have your head squarely on your shoulders, which seems obvious, right? But pretty soon, when people meditate, their heads do all kinds of interesting things. One is it falls forward. Sometimes it goes up, like the chin goes up. Sometimes it turns to a side. Sometimes it goes like this. All kinds of things goes on. And all those things, nothing wrong about doing those, but anything that's off-center tends to start straining the muscles. And so over time, it gets tired quicker. Your head is very heavy. I don't know if you know this, but it's a very heavy thing that you carry around with you. And so if you have your head off-center, like this, these muscles in your neck and the back have to do a lot of work to hold yourself up. But if you keep yourself really balanced and the head kind of, you know, straight down, you know, center of gravity, the line of, then it's, you know, less work for the body to sit here. So that's the main points of posture. So what I'd like to do is to do a guided meditation with you, but you've been sitting for half an hour, and some of you might want to go try getting the cushions and sit on the floor. So we'll take just a minute or so to stretch break. If you want to stand and stretch, get a cushion if you want, and then we'll do a meditation. So as we begin the first meditation, I would like to encourage you to consider that you can't do the meditation wrong. And because it's pretty common for people to think that. But you can't really. And this is the reason why, because the kind of meditation we're teaching here. The primary thing we're trying to do in this meditation is simply to notice what's going on. That's all. That's the primary thing. And if what you notice is that you can't get concentrated, what you notice is your mind is out of control and you can't really remember even to meditate, you've noticed what's going on. And then you're doing it successfully. Isn't that great? So if you notice what's going on, you're doing it successfully. If you don't notice what's going on, there's not a problem because you're just somewhere else. So try to kind of, many people have a very strong tendency to judge themselves critically, to feel like they're doing it wrong. And this is kind of like meditation is meant to be kind of like a problem-free zone. It's kind of like you can do no wrong zone. It's very forgiving, very accepting, very allowing. And that's that kind of attitude sometimes makes it a lot easier and much more welcoming to keep showing up, keep doing the practice, keep developing the mind's ability to be present. So first, taking an alert, relaxed meditation posture. And then gently closing your eyes. And in the beginning, you want to establish a stronger connection to your body and do some basic things to relax your body. So one way to do that is to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, to settle in, to let go, relax. Breathing in deeply and stretching the ribs, the shoulders, like an inner massage. And then as you exhale, releasing. And then letting your breathing return to normal. And in the kind of meditation we do, there's no particular effort to breathe any special way. Just whatever natural, easy way in which you're breathing, whatever way it's happening for you, it's fine. And to help with this settling into your body and relaxing, it's good to scan your body to see if there's some larger muscle groups that maybe you can soften and relax. It might be possible to soften around the shoulders. Maybe as you exhale, letting the shoulders let go into the pull of gravity. It might be helpful to soften the belly. If it doesn't stay soft, that's fine. But if you can relax your stomach, maybe have your stomach hang forward, down. And then sometimes it's helpful to soften the muscles of the face. Sometimes let the eyes rest. Relax the inner gaze of the eyes. Soften around the cheeks and the jaws. And any other ways which you might be braced or tight or held in your body, as you exhale, let the whole body soften, relax. And the place that we center ourselves in meditation is the breathing. So see if you can become aware of your body breathing. Noticing what parts of your body move as you breathe. Noticing how those movements occur. Expansion and contraction, lifting and falling, opening and closing. Or become aware of the sensations of the air going in and out through the tip of your nose. And there are a few different places that can be the home base for focusing on the breathing. One is the movements of the belly. The other is the movements of the chest. And the third is the sensations of the air going in and out through the nose. And then it's also possible to somehow be aware of all of that, kind of a global awareness of your body breathing. Whichever one of those ways feels most appealing to you, easiest for you. Let that be the place where you pay attention, the simple experience of breathing in and breathing out. When you notice your mind wanders off in thought, it's not a problem. Just notice that you've done that, and then begin again with your breathing. Begin bringing your attention to the experience of breathing. Noticing the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. To help you stay with the breaths one after the other, you could, very gently say the word in as you breathe in and out as you breathe out. A gentle little reminder to stay present for the experience of breathing and not to easily let the mind wander off in thought. If you notice your mind drifting off in thought a lot, you might take a moment to see if you can relax your mind, soften, as if your mind is a muscle. And then begin again with your breathing, as if breathing is your companion, that you, your companion you can stay with. One breath after the other. Letting go of your thoughts and coming back to your breathing, to the physical feeling, physical sensations of your body breathing. So you're not so much thinking about your breath as you're bringing your attention into the physical way your body experiences breathing. If anything's happening and makes it difficult for you to be with your breathing, try to simply recognize what that is in a very open, relaxed, allowing way, just to recognize. It's like this. This is what's happening. And once you've recognized it, begin again with your breathing. And then to end this session, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body again. Feel your contact with the chair and your cushion. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So with a room full of so many people meditating, maybe some of you for the first time, there can be a lot, a big range of how this is experienced. One common one is that it's considered for sometimes people the first important stage of insight, stage of the practice, and that is to realize that your mind is out of control. To realize your mind is out of control is a lot better than having a mind that's out of control and not to know it. So we consider it to be the beginning of progress. Because then you can start training it, then you can start developing it. But if your mind is out of control and you don't know it, then what are you going to work with? So if that's what you experienced, that's fine. Some people are really sleepy, you know, evening and tired. It's hard to be awake, and ideally we would have this class maybe 7:30 in the morning, and I think a lot fewer of you would come. I think it's kind of what time works for people in ways. Some of you might have found yourself surprised that your day or your life caught up with you. Sometimes there's emotions that carry with us in our life that haven't had a chance to be processed or be seen, and we finally sit down and be quiet, and lo and behold, things that catch up to us, and we get to see what's there in a clearer way. And that's part of the function of this practice, is to let our life catch up to us and really check in with ourselves and see what's going on. Some of you might have gotten really quiet. Maybe the thinking mind quiet down quite a bit, and it was quite a pleasure maybe, and very peaceful to have a quiet, quiet mind, just stay with the breathing, perhaps breathing in, breathing out. None of those are more right or more wrong than the others. It's just all the different variations that we can, and probably many more as well. And as I said at the beginning, the wisest thing to do in this kind of practice we're doing here is to just notice what's happening. Oh, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. And one of the primary roles for a mindfulness teacher like myself is to normalize everything, to make everything normal. No, that's good. Oh, good. Whenever you tell me, okay, that's good. Because there's, you know, I do know that the mind is challenging. It's challenging to be with our minds. It's challenging to rein it in and to keep it from wandering off. There's all kinds of restlessness. There's all kinds of emotions and feelings. All kinds of strong currents of thoughts and concerns that come up. There's tension we hold and are chronically in our body that kind of get revealed when we sit here. And it can feel discouraging because it seems like we're not really getting into it. We're dealing with all this other stuff. But learning to be present for this and to be non-reactive, just to allow it and just be present, be aware of it, is part of the path of training the mind, training the body to relax, to be present, and to discover this beautiful capacity to just be aware without judgment. Just be aware without making anything a problem. And as we stop making things a problem, then actually the whole body and mind can begin to relax more. When we have a problem with something, oh, this shouldn't be, and I shouldn't be doing it, I shouldn't be breathing this way, or my mind shouldn't be this way, and then we're in resistance, we're reacting, we're kind of getting agitated. And so it'll be the analogy that's used in Buddhism is of a pond. Muddy pond, that's the bottom of the pond is made out of mud, and someone comes through and stirs up the pond. Maybe they go swimming in it, or the cattle go through it or something. And all the mud gets, a lot of the mud gets kind of stirred up into the pond. If someone comes along and wants the water to be clear again without any mud, and the person goes and gets a nice long paddle and starts stirring the water, you know, it doesn't help the particles of mud to settle. It just stirs it up even more, and they stay, you know, in suspension. But what you need to do if you want it to settle is you need to stop stirring at the pond, leave it alone, and then in time it'll settle. So the same thing is true with our mind. That if we stir up our mind by thinking, oh, this is a problem, this shouldn't be, I'm a bad person because of this way, or wow, I must be Buddha's gift to humanity. Look at me, I'm just sitting here so still and peaceful, and wow, you know, I'm sure that I'm getting on the edge of full enlightenment any minute now. All those things are stirring up the mind, keeping it spinning and going. And it's a fantastic thing to learn is to not stir things up. And one of the things that we don't stir things up is we give a vacation to that part of the mind that says there's a problem. Isn't that nice? So this is why it's a problem-free zone. I don't know what kind of symbol we have, a problem, a P with a line through it, or the problems. So I do know that's challenging, meditation, but also helpful to think of it as a training. And it's a training that takes time. It's like riding a bicycle. If you're the first time you're going to ride a bicycle, it's wobbly and you might fall off and, you know, you might be scared and agitated and all that. But as you keep riding, it becomes, you know, second nature after a while, perhaps, and just be smooth and easy to ride. Look, Ma, no hands even. And so same thing with meditation. It's a more difficult skill, meditation, than it is to learn to ride a bike. And there's more things to develop, more skills, more capacities, more self-understanding needs to happen. But it all can happen. It all can grow and develop over time. And your mind is malleable and can be trained. And it's a beautiful thing to train the mind to have a heightened sense of awareness and relaxation. So that, based on that, what happened to you in that meditation, anyone wants to say something about it or have questions coming out of it or just report what happened for you? Or any questions about anything I've said so far? And if you could use the mic, that way everyone can hear.
And talk into it like this.
Yes. No, you take a look high.
I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit more about the relationship to the breath. Sometimes I feel myself, because I'm aware of it, self-regulating, controlling my breathing, my in-breath, my out-breath,
right,
versus just softness, awareness, attention to it.
Right. That can happen. And because this is an awareness practice and not a breathing exercise, mm-hmm, it doesn't matter. So just be relaxed. Don't make it a problem that you're controlling the breath, regulating it. You're just going to become the expert of what a controlled breath feels like. Because that's what you're paying attention to. Oh, look at that. That's what a controlled breath is. Oh, that's how it feels. And you get to cultivate and develop present moment attention on a controlled breath. I wouldn't make it a problem. And both that's a good advice in general for this particular meditation practice, but also it's a little trick. Because generally, if a person is troubled by their regulated breath, they tend to regulate it more. They tend to get more tied up in it and like trying to stop it and all that. It's just a headache. But if it's okay. Just stay with it. Just be with that. And with time, it'll self-regulate.
So my question is, when I'm breathing, I could regulate. I was regulating my breath and trying to focus on it. So though I was able to not have my mind wander in daily stuff, what happened, and so
hold the mic a little closer. There you go.
The noises around me distracted me.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about it as like eventual goal? Can those distractions go away, or should we try to do it at a place where there are many?
Nice. Great. Good question. So we'll talk more about sounds and next time. But one of the principles of this meditation practice here is there are no distractions. They're just something else to notice. And that's the kind of the what we're trying to do. Just notice what's going on. So if there's sounds, we notice there's sounds. If we're troubled by the sounds, we notice we're troubled by it. Look at that. I'm troubled by it. I don't like it. I'm on the brink of enlightenment and someone's, you know, slammed the door, you know. So it's just one more thing to be aware of. So for the time being, we'll talk more about it next week. For the time being, I suggest that if there's sounds that pull your attention away from the breath, don't treat it as a distraction. Just say, oh, sound, and then begin again in the breathing. And one of the best things you can do in this meditation is always be ready to begin again. And the idea of, if 10,000 times in a period of meditation you've begun again with your breath, it's a successful meditation practice. Because you come back so many times to the present moment, back to the present moment, back to this. Does it make sense? Is that
yes, thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
So you had a question up here.
Yeah, I think it's basically the same. I think with the same answer, but when the
See, if you can't hear yourself like up there,
okay.
Then no, that's not working.
Is there
a the green screen? Yeah, but okay. if you hold it like yeah, really like this.
Okay. Hello.
No, it's not. It's not maybe the. I bet the battery is low.
Yeah, the green light just went. Well, there it is.
Let's switch it
up. Hello?
Yeah.
I think it's the same basic answer, but as the breath gets really subtle after a while, and it almost slows down entirely, it almost stops. Then I think, but I'm supposed to be watching the breath. But I think it's not a problem, right? I'm noticing that now, right? So
right.
Just a new.
Yeah. So if that happens, one of the instructions are, you get very quiet, so you can stay with the subtlety of the breathing. So you kind of, the more subtle that gets, the more quiet you get, so you can stay with it. It's like listening to a faint sound far in the distance. You really have to be there. And as the mind gets quieter, then breath gets quieter. It's kind of a reciprocal thing. And then if the breath seems to stop entirely, one option that many people take, when it's the first time it ever happens, is they get scared. Because you're supposed to die if you don't breathe, right? But it's quite remarkable. It's possible to have so still in meditation that the breath stops for long periods of time. And people don't die because the need for oxygen is reduced so dramatically, and there's still enough transfer of oxygen that happens without the breathing. Just the channels are open or something. But if you can't discern any breath whatsoever, then the instructions I'm going to give next week about mindfulness of the body become relevant. I saw a hand over there.
How long should a session last, typically?
Good. So I recommend that for the first week that you do this, I recommend as you do this five-week course, I recommend that you meditate every day. Because you don't have to. I mean, I think that some people benefit a lot from this course by never meditating ever. They just somehow what's being taught in the course is applicable in their life and they find it useful and helpful. So there's no requirement. However, I think you'll get much more benefit from the instructions I give if you're practicing it at home. Because then you have a reference point for understanding what we're talking about and how we're building the instructions over these 5 weeks. The instruction builds over the 5 weeks. So I would recommend you meditate every day at home for these 5 weeks. I recommend that for the first week you meditate for 20 minutes. And that the second week, 25, the third week, 30 minutes, if it feels okay with you. And then keep it at 30 minutes for the rest of the time, for the 5 weeks. And then after the 5 weeks, you can decide whether you want to continue meditating every day or for 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, figure out what you want to do for yourself. But, you know, it's good to kind of follow this in the beginning. Most people find it useful to meditate in the morning when they close to when they first get up. Their mind tends to be more refreshed. It's not so concerned with the thoughts and concerns of the day. And so, you know, either right out of, you know, get out of bed and sit, take a shower and sit, take a shower and have a coffee and sit, you know, whatever you need in order to get settled and meditate. And then it's usually best to do it, it's usually best to choose a place in your home where you don't have a lot of other associations with that space. So like, you know, if you, you know, decide to meditate right in front of your laptop, and your laptop is open and the emails ding, you know, I think you'll be a little more challenged, you know, and associations are, let's check, you know, the news or something. But if you choose a place that, some people really like to find a place in their home, like a corner of a bedroom, that is only used for meditation, so the association of that place is meditation. You get there and you, oh yeah, this is the place I do this, not this is the place where I do something else. And so find a place. Some people find it useful, most people put a timer on of some kind, and usually these smartphones now, many people have timers in them that work fine. The IMC website has a timer you can download. It has a nice meditation bell that you can just set the timer for any time you want, and ding, very nice bell goes off. It's usually nice to wear clothes that are loose fitting, so that they don't bind you and you feel comfortable in them. Some people find that it's not useful for them to meditate in the morning first thing. Some people do it last thing in the day or when they get home from work in the early and late afternoon, they find a nice time. So you have to find the time that works best for you to do it. Sometimes when people meditate, there can be very strong urges that arise. You can suddenly realize with tremendous authority in your inner voice that right now is when the freezer has to be defrosted. Right now, you have to go look for something in the attic that you haven't seen for 5 years. That has to be now. So you have to be very careful not to, to look at the tricks of the mind. The mind has a lot of tricks to try to distract you and keep you from being present. And so you need to kind of be careful with that. And usually it's best if you choose to kind of to do 20 minutes, kind of do it. And don't let things pull you away too easily. If the house is burning, get up and do get up. But the other thing that's helpful to do developing a regular meditation practice is, in fact, if you can, to meditate the same day, same time of day every day. Regularity of practice makes it easier for the whole psychophysical system, our systems, to kind of get into it, to get in the groove, to kind of develop a habit, develop associations, and just feels like, oh yeah, this is what I do at this time of day, and there's no questioning it. If you decide to meditate different times during the day, chances are you'll be debating yourself. You know, with this, you know, but there's the news on the, you know, important news to get, you know, I can't meditate because I have to get the latest news, and whatever it might be. But if you kind of just, this is what I do, 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, whatever, you know, you first get up, this is what I do. It's going to be easier. Long answer, is that okay?
Yeah.
More questions? Yes, one more, or a couple more in the back there, if you can.
I'm just wondering if doing like a guided meditation versus meditating on your own, which is better for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah. I think I would encourage you to do it on your own. It depends a little bit on what guided meditation you do. There's lots of different kinds of meditation. Not all meditations are the same. And so if it was guided meditation was very similar to what I did here on the breath, maybe it's, you know, it's connected and supportive, maybe. Guided meditations can be very helpful to get people the idea, to get the people started sometimes. Sometimes they can be very helpful in relaxation because something's guiding you. But what we're trying to do here is to learn just enough about the practice, the idea of how to do it, and then develop the capacity to be self-reliant, to do it yourself. And part of what we're trying to do in this practice is kind of radical. And this is the part that some people have trouble getting the value of this, is we're not focused so much on relaxing. We're not focusing so much on doing the practice well, oddly enough. We're focusing on learning to be present for what is. And if people have a strong association with meditations about relaxing or getting rid of my tension or solving my life problems, those are fine. Those things happen with meditation for sure. But if that's the agenda, then the people are not really learning how to be present for what is. I'm tense, I'm distracted a lot. And so guided meditations are often a way of thinking, I need to fix myself, I need to be in a different state, I need to change myself, as opposed to learning how to be with what is. Does that make sense? So one more there, please.
I had a very good sitting. But I found that whenever I do it with other people, I feel much, like, I don't know, like more beneficial. Is there anything about that that you know?
Yes, I know that some people find it very helpful to sit with others. It's kind of by the support of others, the idea of all being on the same page, doing the same thing. Some people get motivated and really kind of hone into the practice and really can be here. And when they're alone, they find that they don't have the same discipline, the same encouragement. Their mind wanders much more, or they get restless, or they doubt, what am I doing, you know? And I mean, you know, this is weird what we're doing, right? I mean, this is weird. And so you go tell some of your colleagues or your friends or family members what you're meditating, and their eyes go wide, and they're worried about you, and have you joined a cult, and... You know, and so, but when you're alone, when you're with all these people, you get to, well, you know, these look like okay people, and, you know, it's more encouraging, right? So some people find that it's really helpful to meditate with people. And so you can come here. We have sessions, meditation things and teachings here much of the week. You're welcome to come and look at a schedule. Some people find the opposite is true. Some people find that they meditate the best alone, and they find it distracting to be around other people. And so sometimes those people, you know, will often just spend a lifetime career of meditation mostly being alone doing it. I think it's nice to do a combination of both, because what we're trying to do in the Buddhist point of view is we're trying to discover how to have a kind of spiritual or psychological freedom in all settings. And so it's actually nice to have challenging, nice to practice when times when it's challenging, and it's nice to practice when it goes well. And both of them have their benefits. So if it's nicer to sit with a group, please do. But from time to time, sit alone to address those kinds of challenges. If it's easier to sit alone, time to time sit with a group so you can kind of address and be present for those challenges. Because in Buddhism, the ultimate thing we're trying to do is to be free. And you can't be free selectively. It's kind of, you don't have to learn how to do it in all situations. Okay, so the way this course works, each week builds on the next, and that's because it's easier to learn the next things on the foundation of the first week. So today, it's primarily posture and breath meditation. Breath meditation has a long history in Buddhism. It's one of the probably central meditation practices in Buddhism. It can be very, very useful and very powerful to do it. Next week, the instructions are going to be about including your rest of your body as part of the meditation practice. So discomfort of the body, pleasant feelings in the body, and really to know how to include that rather than thinking that your aching knee is a distraction. You learn how to incorporate it into the practice. But it's easier to understand and apply the teachings on mindfulness of the body if you're established on the breath. The third week, we're going to look at mindfulness of emotions. Turns out it's easier to be mindful in a non-reactive, this way that we're talking about here. It's easier to do it with emotions if you have a good understanding of how to practice with the body. And then the fourth week, we'll do mindfulness of thinking. And it turns out it's easier to know how to be mindful of thinking and not get caught in thoughts if you have a good foundation in the body and a good foundation of knowing how to be present for emotions. So we kind of build over the weeks like that. And if you miss a week, these talks are being recorded, and previous sessions of this class have been recorded as well. So we have a website called Audio Dharma that we have. There's a, you can find it, you'll navigate there and you'll see there's a menu for the Introduction to to Mindfulness Meditation course. And I don't know how quickly these goes up, but usually they go up pretty quickly. They'll be up tonight. So, you know, if you missed anything tonight, you can... on this Audio Dharma site. And they're also listed by date, so you can find by a date too. There's also a handout that we have every week, and that kind of reviews some of the instructions I gave, and it also gives some exercises, mindfulness exercises you can do at home and support you in the practice here. So you can take those and consider it, those of you who like it and find it supportive, consider it to be homework. There's a book of mine called The Issue at Hand. We have lots of copies here, but in the cabinets, but we'll bring them out if people want them. There's some out there on the counter as you leave by the door. And it's my essays on mindfulness practice, and some of those essays are also talking about breathing and the basic practice here. And you're welcome to take a book if you'd like to read it. They're given away for free. And what else to say? I think that's kind of the basic logistical stuff I think you should know. I think these handouts are also, the PDFs are on the website too under some of the courses, if you didn't pick one up or get lost it. So I thought we'd end with a short meditation. You've been sitting for a long time. If you want to just a 30-second stand, quietly stretch, and then we'll end with a 5, 6, 7-minute meditation. So again, taking a alert but relaxed posture. And taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. Massage from the inside. Stretching, opening. And as you exhale, relax, settle in. And let your breathing return to normal. And taking a few moments to see if you can relax parts of your body that might be held or tense. Around the face, shoulders, belly. And you might also see if you can relax the thinking muscle. And perhaps you can relax the thinking muscle or the thinking heart by taking a moment to think well of yourself, to appreciate yourself here, to not see yourself as a problem in that appreciation. Allow yourself to settle into a greater ease or willingness to be relaxed here. And then discovering how your body is breathing right now. The movements, the sensations, the rhythm. Whatever way the body experiences breathing, let that be the place where present moment awareness is cultivated. You only breathe in the present moment. If you're connected with breathing, your attention is in the present. You might take a moment to notice what is clearest in your awareness, the sensations, the experience of breathing in, or the experience of breathing out. And then see, as you stay with your breathing best you can, see if you can trust your breathing. Give it the benefit of the doubt and trust that the best thing you can do at this moment is to attend to your breathing. That's better than thinking about things. Just the rhythm, breathing in and breathing out. And see if you can hang in there for a couple of minutes, gently. Letting go of what you're thinking about. Or letting your thinking recede to the background so that in the foreground you're with your breathing. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, gentle breaths. Don't rush out of meditation, but really kind of feel yourself, be present. Feel your body, contact against the chair or the floor. Check in with yourself. How are you? And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So the task, the instruction so far is most, you know, it's a lot to do with staying with the breath, using the breath as the anchor or the support for the present moment. If you're always breathing in the present moment, and if you're paying attention to the breathing, you're in the present, and you're strengthening your capacity to be in the present with present moment awareness. So the being with the breath is a training to develop that capacity. It's also a training to let go of the thoughts that inevitably will come up. It doesn't matter. It's okay that thoughts come up. Just when you notice it, just let go and come back to your breathing. Start again. The breathing is a remarkable phenomena. And many religious traditions, probably many of you know, have really emphasized the value and importance of breathing. And there's a, you know, I've been paying attention to my breath for over 40 years. And I find it more and more interesting, rather than, you know, getting bored by it. It just kind of opens up kind of realms of inner life and outer life in a very fascinating way. And so the word, you know, another word for breathing is respiration, to respire, right? And so the Latin word for breath is connected to our English word spirit or spiritual, respire. And it turns out that the word spiritual aspiration has breath in both words. Isn't that great? So just kind of make a little point that breathing is a wonderful thing to kind of tune into. And you might, during this week, see what happens if you notice the trends. Notice what goes on with your breathing in different settings, different situations. Probably notice it changes in all kinds of interesting ways. So there's a handout there you're welcome to take as you go along. And also I want to introduce you to a few people here. There's some people here who've had a lot of years, lots and lots of years of meditation. And they're here partly to support you. And if you want to ask them questions about this, you can ask me, you can ask them about meditation, about your posture, about being at IMC. So Richard is here at the soundboard, is one of them. The other, why don't you stand? It's Tanya and Liz. The two of them here. You're welcome to ask them questions. And Kate is out there. She's the manager for today. And you can ask her as well, standing there. And I'm here. So please avail yourself of us. And otherwise, I hope that a little bit of meditation we did today helps you have a really good sleep tonight. Thank you.